AdYak.
You're listening to AdYak. AdYak is the official podcast of the AAF Greater Lehigh Valley Ad Club. Our mission is to inspire creativity and enhance the professional development of the advertising and marketing communities where we live and work. I'm your host, Bill Childs, and I'll talk with artists, designers, writers, directors, photographers, along with those who work in a creative capacity. Our aim here is to serve as a creative resource to help you stay informed, entertained, and above all, inspired. But first, I want to thank ASR Media. We appreciate your support and collaboration. On today's episode of the podcast, I talked to someone I first met back in 2005 at Kutztown University's annual portfolio review, right as this young, ambitious designer was about to graduate with his BFA in communication design. It was a random encounter, or so I thought. Fast forward 20 years, and one day, he reached out to me after reading one of my columns on creativity in Network Magazine, and a friendship was born. I'm talking about Mr. Matt Borelli. But here's the thing. Matt is no ordinary creative. He's an award-winning copywriter, designer, and creative director who spent the better part of two decades working at advertising agencies in the Lehigh Valley. But more than that, Matt is someone who lives and breathes the craft of marketing. He's a dreamer, a doer, and is always on the hunt for the next big idea. In this episode, we dive into the future of AI and how it's shaking up the creative landscape, his creative process, and how he uses his insights and experiences to help his clients drive results. Matt's an inspiring guy, and he really understands the value that creative people bring to business. This episode is a roller coaster of insights, and more than a few laughs along the way. Trust me, you do not want to miss this one. So grab your favorite beverage, kick back, and get ready to be inspired and entertained. Let's get into it. Here is my AdYak with Matt Borelli.
So I want to start where we first met, which was at the Kutztown Portfolio Review.
Right.
Which I think at that time I would have been at RM Squared.
You were RM Squared.
Yeah. And I always loved going to those portfolio reviews. First of all, the talent there was just off the charts all the time. Kutztown does an amazing job with their program. Mm-hmm. And so walk through how we kind of reconnected, because I think it's a cool kind of story, and I want to hear it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I came across your columns. I always knew you were somebody that was an advocate for the business value that creatives bring to companies, to businesses that they work with. And I can't remember. I think it was the one that had mentioned about a slice of pumpkin pie. And it just really spoke to me, and it resonated with me as somebody who also has a mission, you know, at the places where they work to bring that value of the creative team to, you know, to that business level. And I felt compelled to reach out and say, hey, Bill, I'm not sure if you're going to remember me, because thinking back to 20 years ago when that was, I was pretty nervous. I didn't have a whole lot to say. You were the first person I darted to, the first table I darted to when they kind of let us, unleashed us to go talk to the different agencies that came. And, you know, I was just focused on presenting my work the best I could. I think I was pretty heads down about it. Wasn't sure if you'd remember me, but you did. And I'm glad I reached out, because you and I think have a lot, as I mentioned, a lot in common about, you know, our kind of mentality about the whole advertising industry and what creatives bring to the companies that they work with.
Yeah, what was interesting too is when we kind of started exchanging emails, I pretty quickly was really impressed with, you know, your thoughts around that topic, around creativity and messaging, because we were kind of trading back and forth. And I remember I was writing another column at that time about like the power of ideas and what is it about, how do you measure original thought? And I actually asked you to provide a quote for that column, and you did.
That's right. Yeah, Network Magazine.
That's right. Yep. So when you were going to reach out, did you feel like, oh, I don't know how this is going to go? Did you not think about that? Did you, Do you overthink those types of things, or were you just like, I'm just doing it and whatever happens, happens, and if he doesn't remember me or he blows me off or whatever, I'll just, fine, I'll just move on.
I didn't know what to, I didn't know what to expect. Like I said, our conversation was short. It was really me presenting my portfolio, and that was about it. I had a little bit of hesitation, maybe is he going to write back or anything like that. But no, I end up doing a lot of cold outreach and connecting with people because that's really a big part of how I kind of continue to find work and get new work, things like that. The worst that can happen is you don't hear back, and that happens a lot. But I had a feeling you were going to write back, and if you didn't, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. But I'm really glad that you did, and you had a really nice response. It was a warmer response, I guess, than I expected, not knowing you all that well at that point. But yeah, I'm sure glad I did, because like I said, I think we have a lot to talk about whenever we kind of talk shop.
Well, I just think it's important. I think it's important that we are accepting and acceptable of outreach like that. I didn't really have that accessible. It wasn't accessible to me. I don't think people back in the day, when I was coming out of high school, I didn't go to college, but when I was coming out of high school, I don't think you picked up the phone and called Lieberman Appalucci and said, "Hey, can I come hang out for the day, or can I talk to somebody there?" Or, I just maybe that was a thing, but I just don't think that that was something that was more, people that just didn't do that. So I'm glad that you did, because I mean, I think that that's it's critical, and I think people who get those phone calls need to be receptive of them to kind of, bring that next generation along. I mean, I don't know what our age difference is, but you're certainly a lot younger than me. So I was impressed that you took the initiative to reach out. So,
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, and I totally agree with that. When somebody reaches out, especially when it's somebody, there's an age difference there, and they're kind of looking for a connection with somebody, that's been in the industry, and hopefully start so at least some sort of relationship, discussions every now and then back and forth. I always make sure that I do the same thing if somebody reaches out to me. I think it's important. It's a great opportunity to maybe give some younger people some advice so they can learn it a little faster and a little easier than you did. I certainly never mind handing out that advice. I kind of enjoy it.
well, and that's why I wanted to have you on ADYAC, because I've been out of the field now about 3 years, and you're in it. And I'm very curious as to what are you seeing out there, because just when I was coming out after 3 years working at the last place I was at, the markets and the messaging and the media were getting already fragmented. So what type of fragmentation are you seeing now? AI wasn't playing that big of a role yet. It's now here. We have to kind of wrestle with that as well. But just, what are you seeing? Like, what were you seeing, or what are you seeing in terms of like how brands are getting a message through?
Well, you mentioned AI, and obviously, as we all know, that's a huge thing that's happening right now. Clients, I'm seeing them use it for everything from strategic frameworks to writing copy, whether it's for ads, entire email campaigns, blog posts, certainly. Of course, artwork, even video. It's new, and I think people are still, at least some of us, still forming our opinions about it and figuring out how to use it. The tools, get better month over month. New tools come out, and new uses for it come out. So again, it's very much new, and new things are happening all the time. I see clients use it in different ways. Some clients, take it as maybe kind of a shortcut to do some things, to maybe, save some costs, things like that. And then there are other clients who, don't want to go the route of using ChatGPT to write their ad copy. And I certainly commend that. So it does, I personally am seeing it all sorts of different shades of it at the
I
moment.
had Cameron Day. I had Cameron Day on the podcast, and one of the things that he talked about, which I thought was very interesting, was Don't ask ChatGPT to come up with the idea. Feed it
Right.
your ideas and see what it can do to kind of like either make it better or enhance it. He was talking, he was doing a presentation once for Timex, and he was working with some kind of father time concept, right? Like,
Okay.
what father time look like? So I guess what he did was he fed that thought into ChatGPT, and ChatGPT gave him some images of a father time with tattoos and kind of like, a little muscular and kind of like, and
Yeah.
that's kind of cool because he brought the idea to ChatGPT. He didn't say to ChatGPT, give me an idea for a Timex campaign, right?
Right. I like that advice. I like that advice. To me, that there's kind of an analogy there. It's kind of like a creative director working with his art directors or his designers or his writers to take, this kind of core idea and let them do their thing to, bring it to life more, make it better, decorate it, and to maybe even take it to a new place that, that you weren't thinking. And another thing that popped in my mind when you said that is something that I really believe in strongly when it comes to using AI or Chat GPT to as a creative director, as a creative person. And that is, if you're gonna use it, if you're gonna prompt it to help you out in any way, make sure you're using your own brain first and you're coming up with your own ideas first instead of jumping right to it. Because I feel like you would have to have some sort of bias, seeing what the technology spits out, when you're then coming up with your own ideas afterwards, right? I would have to think that your own original ideas are going to be changed by because you have this idea of what the technology spit out and might almost make you second guess what you're thinking. And I don't think that's a good thing, for us creatives who really depend on our innate ability to be creative. And technology, I'm okay with it helping. I don't like it personally for replacing ingenuity.
I think every generation has their thing. I think they probably, when TV came on, people thought, well, there goes radio.
Yeah.
Everything kind of, but it's this seems to really have some implications that we're still wrestling with, and we're not really sure where it's all going to go.
Yeah, no, we're
I
not.
worry, are we creating our own demise? Are we there? How much longer? I worry about that even with my students, my high school students that I'm teaching now. I'd let them know that it exists, but the fact that it can create art and things like video now and things like that, although some of that stuff you can really kind of tell it's has that AI look,
Sure. And it's getting better. I mean, if you think back to when it first came out, it's way better. But and it can do I'm amazed by what it can do. But again, I would hate to see it be a replacement for us creatives doing our thing because it's, as you know, it's just derivative of things that exist. So where is the originality gonna come from if we all start to rely on this thing? Hopefully, I'm going back to kind of how the clients are using it. I worry a bit that some clients, I can tell they're kind of the way they talk about it and how they use it. It's like, they're proud of themselves for using it, but that tells me that they're kind of considering using something like Canva or Midjourney or Firefly to produce a piece of artwork. It's a replacement for a graphic designer, say, but it's not. But there's this idea that, oh, we can do what they can do now because of AI. And I would love to see a little bit more kind of not regulation, but just level setting of no, that's actually not the case. So
Like, how do you put that? How do you put that toothpaste back in the tube?
yeah, right. As a creative, you can't be afraid to speak up about that to the clients. And I've had conversations with clients about it. You want to go easy. You want to toe the line a bit, but yeah, it's important to make sure that at least they know that that's the take from the professional that was doing this before AI existed. And you can't be afraid to speak up for your industry and speak up for, the people who do what they do. So that's important. But again, AI, I think what people love about AI is what they love about a lot of things that are either cheap or free or convenient. As humans, we lo absolutely love convenience, especially in this country. And AI delivers on low cost and convenience. And it's a dangerous thing. It's a slippery slope.
Let's switch gears off of that, and I want to ask you a little bit about you won an Addie Award this year. You were the first award announced at the ceremony. I was there. Talk to me a little bit about that campaign, and that was a campaign for you and your copywriting or your so you know your freelance work that you're doing. Talk about that.
Sure. Yes. Thank you. I found myself freelancing full time again, back to contracting consulting, and it was self promotion time. I don't necessarily enjoy self promotion, to be completely honest with you, but I mean
No
it's,
creative does.
yeah, right. But I mean you got to do what you got to do to get the work because, like I said, it can be feast or famine. So, what I wanted to do, I guess, was advertise my expertise by demonstrating my expertise, particularly copywriting here, because at least as I can see it and I hear from other agencies that I partner with, it's easier to find good designers than it is to find good copywriters. There's just more of them. And maybe it has to do with this region that we're in Lehigh Valley. We're not a big market. So I really enjoy copywriting. So again, I wanted to highlight that and demonstrate that ability through this series of ads that I did, promoting what I see as my value proposition, my differentiator as basically a one-person agency. That being, I can design, I can write, we can back it up, and I can do strategy. If you don't have a strategy in place for, the positioning of your brand or for your product for this campaign or whatever it is, I can do all of those things. And it's coming from one person. I have low overhead, so cost is less, even though you get really good quality work. So those are the kind of messages that I wanted to get out there. But obviously, as an ad person, you want to do it in a way that's hasn't been said like that before, in a way that is different, and therefore it's memorable. Show people that you can promote specific, differentiators for yourself, and hopefully they make the connection that, well, if he can do that for himself, he can do it for me too.
Yeah, no, I thought it was smart. I thought it was fun. There's a little tongue-in-cheek kind of humor to it.
Yeah, I always try to have humor in there. Entertaining people
Design.
in advertising is the way to go, in my opinion, if you can do it.
It was creative and it was memorable. And it just kind of like when I saw that it won, I was like, yeah, that's worthy of a win.
I was very happy to win. Yeah, thank
Yeah,
you.
it's awesome. So what is your relationship with creativity? When you start a project, you're going to start a design, you're going to start some copywriting. What do you, we all have our own processes that we bring. I have a certain things that I do to kind of create the conditions to allow the creativity to show up. That's kind of how it's worked for me. I never found it to be like, oh, it's 10 o'clock, I need to be creative. It just doesn't work like that. So what I would tend to do would be dim the lights. If I could put on an incense, I would, because I'd like a nice little kind of scent in the room, right? And I don't know why this always was, but I would have to sit in my chair and put my feet up on my desk. And then I'd have my sketchbook in my lap with my Sharpie, and I would wait. And it would, however long it would take, and sometimes it would be quick, sometimes it would take a little while. But what I did find what I think that process that I just described there, what that did was it allowed my mind to quiet down. And that's really what I think so many of us struggle with, creative people struggle with, is our minds are so active and there's no off switch. So that was my process for me to kind of like let my brain just kind of spin down, like a hard drive kind of spinning down after the computer's off. And that's when things would start to come. So
I like that.
that's my process. I want to hear what yours is.
I'm gonna try the incense too. That's a new one. I like that. Well, I'm the kind of person that I really need to fully understand, make sure I fully understand the problem that needs to be solved first. And once that's kind of established the strategy behind it, the angle. How are we going to communicate this thing? What is, what's the differentiator, that kind of thing. I won't start conceptualizing until I'm sure I have a firm understanding and I'm on the same page with the client about that. I know that was a really boring start to what's your creative process, but I like to have that done so that I'm not starting and I'm not riffing off of something that's BS, something that's actually
Right.
not accurate. So
Well, how do you do that? Well, how do you do that? You just do a little check-in with the client, like say, hey, this is what I'm thinking, because I've done that before. That's actually smart. But is that what you do?
Well, I study w the request, whether it's a brief, it's usually not a brief, but it's usually an email or a call, and I look at it, I read it and I decipher, okay, so they want to do this. Is there any other kind of downstream effects or any other problem that is related to this that's part of it that they're not realizing is there? And then
Okay.
I'll report and then I'll talk, I'll have a conversation with them about that, making sure I understand what the problem is to be solved. And then, okay, do you have strategic positioning in place for this, or is that part of what you need me to do? And when I talk about positioning, I'm talking about, all right, we have, we're a new brand, or we have this product we need to launch. It's a new product. Do I have the information that tells me, the research that tells me what their position in the market is, what the nuances of that industry are, that kind of thing. And by the way, this is my favorite use of AI is ChatGPT for that kind of thing.
Okay.
It helps me pick up and learn about new industries, new clients, their competitive clients way quicker than it ever could before.
Okay.
I love it for that. Powerful. Okay,
Well,
so that's
what happens if something comes in that you're not prepared for from an idea standpoint? Like you're trying to find your lane. Right, like what you're describing, you're kind of okay. What's the strategy? This, that. But then something comes in that's just like, whoa! This is like, do you run with that? Do you write it down? Do you say, I'm going to visit that later? I'll put a pin in that for come later. If I don't, if
Well,
this
if an
doesn't,
idea comes to mind
a
in my,
real like a far out idea.
oh, well, yeah, I mean, I think far out ideas are the best ideas. So, yeah, absolutely. I hope this answers your question. So once I kind of make sure I understand everything that, needs to be solved here, then I first start thinking about writing. I think about a concept to deliver this message, whatever it is. I'm a big headphones on with brown noise on. I have a good, good set of noise canceling headphones, and I put the brown noise on, and that helps my very busy mind kind of calm down a bit. And I write down usually. I'm not a big pen and paper pad person. I text myself voice to text if I'm not in front of the computer, or I text myself or Slack myself, lines that come out. I know not all of them are going to be good, but you got to get the good ones out to make room for the, I'm sorry, get the bad ones out to make room for the good ones, right? So I'll write them down. I feel like you know it when you have a good one, and you know it when there's one that's not it. But they all come out, and then I kind of shortlist that. And as I'm doing that, I start sometimes thinking about a visual for that, because again, I design and write. Now sometimes, a lot of times, I mean, I don't say I can do like come up with a concept like in a day, because I like to come back to it a few days in a row. Think super hard on it, then let my subconscious work on it for a while. Just drop it and let my either work on a different task. Hopefully it's more like a production related task, so I don't have another mind bender going on. Or think about it while I'm driving, or go for a walk in the woods and think about it, or think about it at bed. I think about it, it's weird, but I think about it when I go
Subconscious.
down to bed, and I text myself ideas that come up. And honestly, a lot of great ideas come up around those times. I really believe that your subconscious works on things when you're not thinking about it. It can be a new idea, it can be a refinement to an existing early seed of an idea that you had early on. So that's how my ideas come. Sometimes I'll hop on the computer and start setting type or something for a headline. If it's not fully there, I think I just a lot of this stuff after you do it for a while, I swear it becomes like almost subconscious where you know like, okay, I'm gonna go and get on the computer and set this headline up and maybe throw in a visual and see where this goes. And I work a lot of things out, you know, in real time, I guess you could say, on the computer. I don't feel like I need to have a complete plan sketched out and then go execute it. I don't really work like that.
At what point do you bring the client in then?
I don't bring the client in until I have a fully fleshed out idea. It's more like a technical thing. If there's something I'm not sure if this is actually accurate or something like that, or can this be said? And I'm really basing like the creative, the platform message on that. And then I would need to check in. But I like to have the whole idea done,
Okay.
and then present it. That's me. I know a lot of people do like to, you know, check in early and often, but I don't know. I've done that too, and it has worked out better for me more times than not. Coming up with an
Always.
idea fully fleshed out, and here it is. And usually it goes well because it has all the strategic thought behind it, and you present the strategy first before you show them anything, and tends to work out.
You
You
ever
got
have an
that one.
idea? You ever have an idea that you're working on that you, it's just not like coalescing, it's just not coming around,
Oh yeah.
and then you have to kind of like, you know, it's always good to get feedback, so you start asking maybe other people, and you know, maybe they're not seeing it or they're not seeing what you're seeing. Have you ever had that happen?
Yeah, well, yeah. So for better or worse, what I think what I do is when I realize I have an idea that's like half there, and I might be in love with the first half with what I have, but I
Right.
know that it's not gonna work. Like there's some sort of flaw in it that it won't be a true thing, or for whatever reason, it just you just know it's not gonna work. You gotta let it go. And I think I would find myself earlier in my career trying to force it to make it work. And it doesn't feel good working on it when you're doing that. And it doesn't ever end up where it needs to. And after a while of doing this, I think you start to recognize that early, and you just okay, you got to come up with something else. It's not that big of a deal. This is cool, but it's not going to work out. Maybe save it, put it in your stash, or maybe it'll possibly work out in some shape or form for something else down the road. But you gotta let it go. But I was getting to the better or worst thing. I think sometimes if I go and ask somebody about their opinion, sometimes it's not good for my creative process or anybody's. I think it can it, if you start to second guess yourself as a creative too much, I think you're disarming yourself. And I think you're doing yourself a disservice. But
Interesting.
it's me. It's me. Everybody's different.
I'll give you an example of when that happened to me. I just was recently reminded of this. I was talking to someone from the morning call where I worked,
Sure.
and I had to come up with a watchdog campaign for the editorial department. And watchdog stories are the type of stories that, you know, investigative stories where they kind of trying to, you know, find out stuff that's going on that's wrong, that they're going to expose, right?
Okay.
And it's the backbone of like newspapers. It's what newspapers are known for, is like investigative reporting. So we start the process, and I'm thinking, I got onto this idea of the word write, right, WRITE, and then also RIGHT, right? The dual meaning of right. Right and wrong, right, wrong, right, wrong. So I'm doing my thing. I got my sketchbook, I got incense burning, I got the lights off, I got the feet up, right? And I what I ended up with that I liked, but I knew it wasn't there. It was using right to expose wrong. Using right to expose wrong, right? But I knew I had something, but I also knew it wasn't there. I couldn't get it there, right?
Yeah, sure.
I don't say this out of ego, but that doesn't happen a lot to me. So it kind of threw me a little bit because I was kind of like, why can't I get this? And I was talking to artists and they're like, it's fine. It's good. Using right to expose wrong. That's what you're trying to say. Let's go. Let's do it. We got to get this done. And finally, out of frustration, the one day I went back to the editor, Dave Erdman, and I kind of went in into his office, hat in hand, kind of like all sheepish and like kind of a little bit kind of like feeling a little defeated. And I said, Dave, I got a really good headline here, and I'm, but it's not there. It's not there. And I showed it to him, and this was so funny. Within 3 seconds, he goes, why don't you just use right exposing wrong?
Oh, yep. Case in point, it does pay to, bounce things off other people.
Because I really wanted to use that concept, and that's what it became, right? Exposing wrong. So he shaved off a
Love it.
couple, 2 words, and it became 3 words, and it was perfect, right? Exposing wrong. Watchdog report.
Yeah, that is perfect.
Right? So he, sometimes, you got to be willing to, that didn't feel comfortable for me to have to go back to the guy that gave me the job to do it in the first place. I'm basically coming
Right.
back and going, I didn't land the plane, but like, I'm not going to crash. We're safe, but I'm not ready to land this plane yet. What do you got? And he had it in 3 seconds.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so it was. I thank him for it every time, all the time, because it was like he just nailed it, Which I have always my when I was a creative director, my thing has always been, anyone can have an idea, a good idea. It wasn't just
Absolutely.
because I had the title of creative director didn't mean that I had to be the one that always had the good ideas.
Right. Yep, that means you are a good creative director.
Thank you. I might have some good ideas, but really, I want you to take this and make it better. I'll give you the kernel and the tools, and then you go out and you take it and you make it better and bring it back. And then I'll approve it and we'll go on our merry way. So,
Right on.
okay, well, let's talk about that. In your experience, you were an art director, right? You did art direction,
Yes. Yep.
copywriting, designing. What did you like doing the most? I mean, obviously, besides copywriting.
Okay, so yeah, in the design world, let's see.
Vastly different roles.
I enjoyed packaging quite a bit. Started right up out of school at a packaging design agency. I enjoyed that a lot. Learned a lot about, art production, different types of print productions, and thought it was really a fun thing to do, and be able to see your products on shelves was really cool. So that was one I really enjoyed. I don't have a ton of packaging design come through the doors anymore, unfortunately. But large format is another thing I like to do a lot. So have a clients. I have a decent amount of trade show work that I do for clients, and what I love about that right now is, it's kind of like a gigantic print ad, because a lot of times the print ad creative is exactly the same as the trade booth or the trade show booth art, minus some copy, cut out the supporting copy. So trade show is something I really enjoy doing. I have one client right now who's going to three different shows over the next 6 months, and it's three different audiences, and we're doing kind of utilizing the same voice style, same look and feel, but with different taglines, and then slightly different art supporting the copywriting. And I'm excited about that. It'll be fun. They're doing a pretty big space, and it's always cool to see things kind of larger than life.
Okay. I also know that one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was what advice would you have? Because I know we had a lot of students at the Addie Awards this year, and
Yeah,
Kutztown did
we
really
did.
well, and Northampton did well, and Moravian, and really some really nice work. What advice would you have for those students kind of getting ready to start their career? What do you, in terms of like what you're seeing and what you would want to tell them,
Good question.
you
I'd say to the design students, to the designers, learn how to write, practice writing, because if you can use your design skills coupled with an ability to write, probably start with like headlines, you've got a lot going for you. You can present and you can create an entire concept for an entire campaign or an entire brand. So you can do, if you can combine those two things and do the whole picture, and then learn how to present it. I mean, that's how you become a creative director, and that's how you prolong your career with these different skills that really do bring value to marketing departments and agencies and the like. And if you're a writer, I'd say don't be afraid to sketch to show your concepts. Because again, it's just the opposite of what I said about, or the other side of the coin, I guess, what I said about designers. If you can at least sketch to show a concept so that people can go, aha, and you can get buy-in on your idea. You're not just writing, not that that's anything wrong with just writing or just designing, but the more you can think of what you're doing as part of a larger picture, the marketing picture, the advertising picture, the branding picture, and not just one kind of component of it. The more valuable you're going to be, the more success you're going to have, the easier time you're going to have finding a job. That would be it probably.
I mean, I think for me, I think just stay curious about
Yeah,
everything.
absolutely.
When you're curious, you ask questions. You're asking questions, you're open to hearing other, opinions or responses. And, you have to kind of get your mindset around the fact that any career, you have to be, learning is lifelong. It doesn't stop after you get out of college and you start the job, because that's when the real learning starts, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You got to be open to that. You got to be open to kind of taking that stuff, taking it all in, learn as much as you can. And I think that's a good point, is, if you're a designer, learn how to write, because, and learn how to present too. I would add in there as well. Learn how to
Absolutely.
present what you're creating.
Practice public speaking if you can. Whenever you, I mean, you can, you just have to make it happen. It helps a lot. And another thing is to the writers and the designers, say you're working at an agency, pay close attention to the strategists there and how they do their job and how they work with the client, the questions that they ask the client, to figure out how to position them, because that's the foundation of what you're doing. That's your jumping off point. So learn about, how that process happens, how a good strategist, does their work. And it's only going to help you as a designer. It's only going to help you, be a better teammate, be liked and appreciated in the agency. Pay attention to what, not just strategists too, even account management, right? Pay attention to what they're doing, because it's easy to overlook, I think, for some creatives how hard that job is and how valuable that job is. Same goes for project managers. Look around and what's going on in the agency besides what you're doing, and recognize how you fit into that puzzle and appreciate and help out everybody else, and it just makes for a good experience, and you're going to find more success.
One of the things that I ask a lot of designers that come on Ad Yak and is, do you feel like you chose this career, or it chose you?
Oh man, geez. Whew. I don't know. Is it a cop out if I say a little of both?
Just as long as it's true to you.
I mean, I'll say this, and then maybe I'll figure out the answer as I talk a bit. I never was like, I started a career as a designer. I went to school for graphic design. But I doodled as a kid. I drew Looney Tunes characters and things like that. I wasn't somebody that, people looked at and thought, oh, he's really good at art. He's really good at drawing. There are people that are exceptionally good at drawing and illustrating and things like that. That wasn't me. I had a friend that started at what was Allentown Business School at the time, went into an 18-month program for graphic design. So I went over to his house. He had like a Mac G3 and Photoshop, Illustrator on it, 3D program. Maybe it was Maya, I forget. Anyway, and he was showing me the stuff that they were doing, and I was like, whoa, you can create this kind of stuff in there. And like the stuff you're doing in Illustrator, like you're gonna print that. I thought it was awesome. So I thought I didn't know what I was doing and was gonna do out of high school. I didn't really know what I was gonna do. I was enrolled at LTRC for liberal arts. So if that doesn't tell you enough there about not really knowing what I was gonna do. And then I was like, you know what? I could do this. Why not? This is as good of a guess as any other thing I can come up with. So yeah, so I decided I switched to a multimedia program at LTRC. And I realized, like, yeah, this is what I think this is what I should be doing. This is what I should be doing. Yeah. So I don't know.
And you ended up at Kutztown, so you ended up at a good program.
I did, yeah. I decided, and that wasn't even the plan from the beginning. I decided that I wanted to design for print. This is, 2002-ish, and print was still a big thing. I was like, this is cool that we're making stuff on screen. I was doing like interactive experiences for CD-ROMs, not even for the
I
web.
remember those.
And I was like, I want to do something that gets printed, something I can touch, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'll try Kutztown. My professor's like, it's pretty competitive to get in there. I said, all right, well, I'll give it a shot. But luckily it worked out, and yeah, just went to the KUCD program there, and
That's awesome.
was really glad I did.
Yeah. Matt, I go back so far. When I started at the Morning Call, I got a job at the in the copy and layout department. Okay. There were no computers. It was proportion wheels and Xerox machines and scissors and waxers. That's how we
Wow.
designed. So, and we would use clip art out of like Clipper, I think was the mag one thing, and Metro Media Services or something. It was art
Okay.
services that was just giant books of illustration.
Yeah.
And then we would spec the text or the headline, put the photos in, lay out the copy. We wouldn't even have to type the copy. The copy would already be written, but then we would send it up to composing to set the ad. We wouldn't even set our own ads, and then they would come down to us before it would go to the sales person, and we would correct it, maybe send it back up, have it come back down, and then it would go back out. So when the computers came into the department in 96, it was like, oh, this is just going to help us get our job done faster, as opposed
Yeah.
to, looking at it as like a tool that's going to help me design,
I
because
see.
I was already
Yeah.
doing design. You know what I mean? So I'm grateful that that's how it, like, the timeline went for me in terms of like, in other words, more analog before I became digital. So I was able to kind of straddle both worlds as opposed to always just being on my computer.
Right. Was it a big learning curve to jump onto desktop publishing from doing what you were
No,
doing with the
actually, it
pasting,
wasn't.
cutting and
No.
pasting?
Mm-mm. We had a program that was, I think it was proprietary for newspapers. It was called Multi-Ad Creator. So it wasn't Photoshop and it wasn't Illustrator, but it was a program that newspapers used kind of exclusively to build ads. And
Okay.
it imported photographs, and you could set text and colors and stuff like that. And then as Photoshop and Illustrator started getting more prominent, that kind of fell away. And then I think Quark Express kind of jumped in there at some point. And yeah, I avoided Quark. Like,
Oh man,
I never
like the
used it.
plague.
I stayed on Photoshop and Illustrator, and I never had to use it. So, but
The Kutztown professors would give me a really hard time because I would not leave Illustrator to go to Quark. You have to do page layout in Quark. Illustrator is not a page layout program. I'm like, well, look, I can do it, and I can do
There's
it pretty
always
easily.
workarounds. And
They're
then
like,
thank
oh,
you.
you have to, when you get a job, they're gonna make you use Quark. You have to learn it. Never had to use it.
Is that still around? I should know if it is, but I
It's
don't.
interesting you say that because I have a client, they're a nonprofit, and they asked me to do a publication design. And the last one that was done just last year was done in Quark. And I think my jaw hit the keyboard. I was like, you really? I didn't even know it was still around, but it's still around.
I want to go back to something that you said earlier because I didn't I let you go past and I didn't ask you at the time. So one of the things that for me would always be difficult would be when I would be doing my idea generating, right? Kind of going through the process. I land on something, I think, ooh, that's something that fit, that checks off all the boxes. I develop it, right? And then I could feel myself kind of falling in love with it. I feel like getting very, I'm getting very excited about it. I'm like, ooh, this is, and then I try to like almost like forget about it. I just walk away from it. I go to bed. I wake up the next morning and see if I still have that same passion. And then it gets developed. And I know in my heart, this is the right approach. It's right. It's right for them. It's right for this client that we're going to be talking to. And then we go present. And it becomes like a nothing burger. It becomes like, not feeling this. Right? It's like that is always, that was hard for me because it's like I feel like you know, those are usually the ones that are the more riskier ideas or the more the ideas that are kind of like a little out there maybe for the client, but I know it's the right approach. How do you, I mean, maybe that doesn't happen to you, but how do you deal
Oh,
with that when
it
it does, when you know it's the right approach?
does. Yeah, that's tough, obviously. I think that one thing that's really important to keep in mind when you get your idea rejected or your work rejected is that, there's a lot of your first of all, it's out of your control. I mean, you can stick up for your work. I think everybody has to figure out their level of comfort, how much they want to stick up for their work, or what part of their work they want to stick for, and kind of go with that as a plan as you go as these things happen. But one thing to realize and remember is that the person that is evaluating your work and accepting it or rejecting it, you don't know all of the reasons why they are rejecting your work. You got to keep in mind. They have to, after they say yes to you, and you know this, they have to sell it to their boss and say, I accepted this work from the agency, right? And they're gonna have to have real good reasons as to why they were okay with this and they want to move forward. And that person above them, their boss, you don't know them. They might have some tendencies, some idiosyncrasies that this person's aware of that you're not, like they don't like the color green or something like that, or whatever it is. It could be anything. There's so many things that you don't know what goes into the yes or the no. And maybe the person who's evaluating your work, maybe they made the wrong choice. Maybe they made the wrong decision. Maybe they make the wrong, decisions. Bad decisions a lot. Maybe they usually don't, but this time they did. I mean, again, you gotta take the good with the bad. Like anything in this industry is no different. Working with clients is no different. You can't, it's so easy to say, well, don't take it personal, right? But if you re and that but and that is what you need to do. You need to not take it personal, but you can't just snap your fingers and not take it personal. You have to find a way in your head to make it to not take it personal, to make it okay for you. And that's how I look at it when things don't go my way. Again, it's I think you can take there's this it's a very subjective, field that we work in. And you do your best to, like I said, use strategy as a foundation, present your work with strategy first. Always check yourself when you're working. Does this honor the strategy? Is what I'm doing here, the decisions I'm making as a creative, is it honoring the strategy that we all agreed on? And if it does, you can take a lot of that subjectivity out, and then you get a lot more yeses and you do nos. You make it a more of an objective decision for this person to approve the work. They see that you think like a business person in addition to thinking like a creative person, because everybody's both. And not everybody taps into both.
I think too, one of the things that I wanted to say at the Addie Awards this year, which I didn't get to, it was on my mind, but I just never got to say it, was, you know, as designers and artists and copywriters and photographers and videographers, we're all in the room, we're creating this kind of content, we're creating this work, and it's winning awards and it's great. But we should also take a moment to thank the clients that agreed to let that go through. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a really great point. If it's yeah, if it's work that's, pushes boundaries, so to speak, and the client, has the nerve to buy it, to go for it. And you gotta love that. And you gotta appreciate it. We had a the last agency I was at, we had a client that he worked for a it's a large healthcare company. They're it's consumer packaged goods, but they're healthcare related products. They're based in Sweden, and they have like a corporate, of course, they have a corporate kind of brand guidelines, and they're very, very, very strict. And they're not really built towards like campaigns. They're more built towards like print materials and trade show and like stationery, and like it's pretty sterile stuff. And it's not a very good toolkit to work with, especially when the task at hand was to kind of do more of a disruptive campaign.
Right.
So what we did is we came up with a concept that was bold, right? They were going to a trade show, and they were going to be next to, I think, Nike and Gatorade. And in my heart, I knew that they can't show up with this identity, using this identity to create the creative. It's going to be a snooze fest, right? And so,
News fest.
yeah. So, showed the client two different directions. One that follows the boring guidelines, and then one that doesn't follow the guidelines. It's not like completely insane work. It's not, anything that's like, whoa, who would ever go for that? But it's something that is, it's more bolder, and it's out there. And the client loved it. He's like, I'm gonna have a hell of a time selling this up the chain. And he did. We had to go back and show them more iterations in the boring style for him to convince to take to a conversation, follow-up conversation with his boss, and say, this is why this is, look at this, like this isn't gonna fly. We're spending so much money, on this trade show sponsorship and this huge 30 by 30 booth. Like, we can't show up with this B2B look in this consumer kind of atmosphere. And he sold it, and it was awesome.
There you
I think I
go.
give him a shout out on social. Like, it's awesome to work with clients who aren't
Get
afraid to push the limits, push the boundaries of what they're comfortable with. And yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because that's kind of a nice anecdote there to share, I think, with everybody. And
There was
I
a great quote. I don't know
enjoyed
who
it.
said it, but it always made me laugh, because it starts out a certain way and you think it's gonna, and then it kind of totally turns on you. It says, always practice safe design. Use a concept.
That's great.
Use a concept.
That's great.
But
Yes.
I'll tell you, I think of one of the things that I think of from this year's Addie Awards is the stuff that Nate Linder did for the Iron Pigs. With the snowball, or this, the winter into spring, where the
Yes.
temperature was falling, there was like three of those in that. It's so smart. No URL, no phone number,
Yeah, I love
just
that.
the logo. Not even the Iron
You
Pigs.
know, was there even copy on that one? Help me remember.
Just two words. There were like the word that was like, I think the one that I forget what it said. It said like snowball, and then the snow was
Oh.
falling down.
Oh, right.
And then
Okay.
it
It's like a
was labeled
juxtaposition.
underneath,
Yeah.
it said play ball. So from
Yeah.
snowball to play ball. I mean, that's kind of
Yeah.
brilliant, right?
Yeah. Shout out to Nate. Nate is he's a really, I mean, he gets advertising. He gets outdoor.
Oh, yeah.
He's tremendous
And it was,
at copy and design and concepts. Yeah,
yeah, and Judge's
he's
Choice. It
good
won the
on a
Judge's
clinic.
Choice. Yeah, well deserved too. I thought this year was a good show. I really enjoyed it.
Good.
I had fun talking to everybody, as many people as I could. I would have loved to have talked to, every single person that won, but we'd still be there.
Yeah, it felt like it ended really quickly. It was fun. I kind of wanted to hang out longer.
Yeah, it was a good time. So what's the best piece of advice you ever got?
Somebody taught me to make sure you don't show them the work until you set it up with strategy first. Because once you show them the work, They're not listening to you at all. They might look at you every now and then and nod, but it's going in one ear and out the other, because what they're doing is looking at what the visual is, and they're evaluating it and criticizing it in their head and thinking about whether they think it works or not, what's wrong with it. So you got to, and there's a couple good reasons to set it up with strategy. And this is all stuff you know, obviously, but one, to make sure that they're hearing the strategy, the setup before they're looking at it. And two, because again, if you set it up with, okay, here was the problem, here's how we decided to solve it, you break it down, strategically showing why you made the decisions that you made. Again, you take as much subjectivity out of it as you can, because then you have a very strategic leg to stand on, a foundation to stand on. And then, because unfortunately, people, and it's not nobody's fault, not blaming anybody, but non-creatives don't see creatives as peers, as far as I can tell after doing this for 20 years. You have to change their mind. You have to work harder at showing that you're a business person than the average person does, because if they're not creative, they look at you almost like you're an alien. You think differently. Even though you and I know that that is not the case, we just still are tapped into our sense of wonder that we had as kids that we never let go. And we just love the art of communicating things. So once you can, if you set it up, then they realize, okay, I see why they made the decisions that they did. It makes it a lot easier for me to say yes and give them my buy-in. And once I started doing that, the amount of yeses I got after presenting work went up significantly. So
Word of the pre-sale, that's what I call that.
yeah, there you go. Right. So at least that comes to mind as one of the biggest pieces of advice I got.
I also take it a step further, and I would tell clients what I'm about to show you is going to make you uncomfortable.
Oh, I like that.
You're going to be uncomfortable because you're seeing it for the first time. I've been
Right.
living with this for the past 3 weeks, so I'm
Yes.
more comfortable with it. So I tell clients, or I would tell clients, like, I don't really want to know your answer right now. You need to live with this. You need to take this home or back to your office, or look at it, think about it, and then decide. I don't want like a knee-jerk reaction, because if you're uncomfortable with something, which I'm telling you're going to be, because it's different than anything you've ever seen before, your immediate response is going to be to say no, and then I'm going to have to
Absolutely.
go back and start over.
That's a really good point. That's a really smart thing to do, because yeah, it's new things are inherently uncomfortable, and people don't want to be uncomfortable when they're making business decisions. And
Correct.
yeah, like you said, don't give me an answer yet, because more likely you're going to get more of a yes if you let them sit on it and chew on it and maybe show their partner or something like that, or show it around a little bit more.
Well,
Yeah, you're going to have better results.
and to your point, what I would do exactly that. I would reiterate the strategy. I would reiterate what they're trying to do. I would remind them that it reminds them that I was listening to what they were saying.
Yes, good
It's
point.
almost like a lawyer. If I'm not going to ask a
It
question,
is.
don't know the answer to. So I already know every question that I'm asking is going to be a yes, right? I'm going to say, remember when we talked about this, how you wanted it to be this? Yes. Do you remember when you also kind of said, so it really kind of sets up
Well, I
this.
gotta jot this down, Bill.
What's
This is
that?
good. This I gotta jot this down. This is good. Only ask questions that have a yes answer.
Because it just predisposes them for saying yes. So when
Right.
you tell them, I show them the concept, it's like, they want to say yes. They just
That's
say,
smart.
oh,
I had a
yeah,
friend
maybe.
who was a stand-up comic, not like a famous one or anything. He would just go do the local stuff, and I went to see him once, and he like kept asking questions in the beginning before he really got into his bit, where he was prompting a clap and applause response from the audience. And I asked him, I was like, "Why'd you do that?" He's like, "Because it primes them up to react, to give me, positive reinforcement, to applause more when I start doing, my bit, my jokes." And I thought, oh, that's pretty smart.
That's awesome. So, Matt, the hour went quick, my friend.
Oh, wow. Yes, it did.
I enjoyed talking to you. This was
Likewise.
a good time. I'm glad you reached out.
Me too.
I'm happy that I responded the way that I did. I always respond I would anyone that takes the time to reach out to me, I'm gonna respond back, in a positive manner, because it's critical, it's crucial. I'm a big believer in, sending the elevator back down, or just, offering mentorship or friendship or whatever. We're all in this same boat, we're all in this together. So, I'm glad you took that chance when you did.
Me too. Love you for that, Bill.
Take care, my friend, okay? And keep doing your thing. Keep pushing those good ideas, and I'll see you around.
All right. Thanks, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
Take care, man.
All right, Ad Yakkers. Hope you enjoyed it, because we have many more great conversations planned and guests lined up ready to yak it up. Ad Yak is sponsored and produced by ASR Media. Theme song was written and performed by Dan Ross. Ad Yak is the official podcast of the AAF Greater Lehigh Valley Ad Club. Stay hungry, stay humble. Till next time.
This episode of Ad Yak is rated O for, oh man, that was good.